All right, everybody, welcome to this next episode of the Renegade HPG podcast. My guest today is Eldon Kalger, otherwise known as Eldonius Rex or Estray3 on Facebook. You can find his stuff on social media at that Eldonius Rex tag. Eldon has been doing a ton of work for the Tech Stocks Battletech. I think the big start was with the Mackie. Was that first big episode, and then the Marauder episode that just came out, and has also been doing some official work for Catalyst Game Labs lately, including some book covers that just got released. So looking forward to kind of talking about kind of that path that you've taken kind of into this world, and kind of what got you into it, and kind of your process for creating some of these awesome art pieces. But Eldon, thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Travis. I'm glad to be here today on the Renegade HPG podcast. Hello, everybody out there in Mechland. I hope you're all doing today and keeping your fusion reactors cool.
Definitely. I first kind of pulled in from that, found you through the Mackie arts, actually, that I have back there from the art packs that you released. And you have that Marauder art pack that you're working on now that I think is coming up. But I kind of hopped on that as soon as I can. I really feel like... we should have more artists putting out, prints like you do. I think it'd be great for people on the walls and a great item that CGL just doesn't, put out a lot of, other than kind of the random posters. But yeah, I found you first through that Mackie art. I don't remember. I think it was even before the Mackie episode came out, and maybe it had gotten posted, and I kind of, reached out to you. And then, you started kind of hitting it big time, through Tech Stocks. What was that like? Like what is your background, and kind of what pulled you into Battletech, and how do you kind of get connected with Tex and the work he's doing over there?
Well, first off, I would really say it's because of Tex that the prints happened in the first place. Mm. I did not think that anybody would be interested in buying prints of the work that I had produced for the Mackie episode, but he really pushed me to release those packs, and they were a great success. So that's all thanks to him. As to my history with Battletech, it's a very convoluted history and path, because when I was growing up, I was a country nerd. Mm-hmm. So I was out in the country with no friends around or anything else. So I was very much an 80s kids when it came to cartoons and stuff. So I got my start back in the day on Robotech and Transformers and He-Man and all that kind of stuff right there. But living in the country, I didn't have access to, say, comic book stores or game stores or friends with older brothers who were familiar with the material.
Yeah.
When I had first heard about Battletech, I believe it was during a camping trip with the Boy Scouts, and all the kids were talking about it. They were talking about this game, Battletech, and the older kids that were part of the troop, were talking about it. And we played a game in the woods where basically everybody pretended to be mechs, and how you knew who was what mech is that they said the name of the mech. Of course, I had no experience. I didn't know what any of this was. So it was like, okay, if you're a locust, you run really fast, you say you're a locust. If you're moving slow and you're heavy, you're an Atlas. And of course, the Atlas beats the locust. Or there's a hunchback. And if you got two kids who say they're a hunchback, they could beat, like, the guy who says he's a Warhammer. It was like a mess. It just turned into like kids running through the woods in the middle of the night, just screaming the names of battle mechs.
Yeah.
But of course, I didn't know what these things looked like. It just sounded like stuff I was already familiar with. So I was already familiar with like Robotech.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh my gosh, there's this thing with these giant robots. It sounds like fantastic. But of course, deprived of all the materials. Like I would see maybe a glimpse of one of the technical readouts or this or that, or somebody would talk about it at school. But I didn't get my hands on like any of the materials until like later in life, and like in a B. Dalton's bookstore. And they had the old second edition starter kits, I believe.
Yep.
The full plastic mini set. And I would buy those sets at the time. But by then, none of my friends were like really interested in playing a very complicated board game.
Yeah.
Because at that time, we were doing role-playing games like Rifts and stuff like that. But it was just more or less, we're going to go sit on the porch, drink a lot of Surge, eat a lot of chips, and just kind of like talk about goofy stuff, much less than actually playing a game by its rules. And at that time, I was like trying to get my friends into like these FOSSA properties. Mm-hmm. So I had that BattleTech box. I had the CityTech box.
Okay.
I even had a Centurion and Interceptor box from those games. But no, I just couldn't get anybody interested in it. So it's just kind of like faded. But I was like always had like an eye on the property. And honestly, for a long time, it was not part of my life until last year when we were in the COVID lockdown times. And at that time, I was working on my own personal projects. I was trying to develop a digital painting style, and I was working on my comic, which is what Astray 3 comes from. That's the name of the comic I was making. Mm-hmm. And that is what you'll find at the main website. So that was more like a fantasy kind of like Euro style kind of comic I was creating, but it was not taking off. It had its fans, not a lot of people were paying attention to it. So of course we're in lockdown times. I live by myself. So, you know, I'm alone out here working from home and I'm just consuming YouTube videos like crazy. And that's when I come across Tex and his BPL podcast and his Tex Talks BattleTech podcast, which like I listened to those like over and over and over again during the time. And he eventually mentioned, and that was getting me perked back and interested. I will go back a little bit further and probably say my return to BattleTech was first instigated by MechWarrior Online when that was first coming out and that was first announced. And that had like a lot of promise.
Yeah.
There at the beginning, because we had flying debris, redoing all these mechs, updating the look of it. And it was like, oh my gosh, BattleTech's coming out. It's a game. I can play a game. And I was one of the first early funders on that.
Nice.
I played a lot of the beta.
Yeah.
But then we come to Tex and Tex Talks BattleTech. And then I believe it was right after the Exodus and Clanners Elementals episode. And he announced he was going to do the Mackie. Now, when Tex had mentioned stuff before, I'd go to Sarna. Shout out to Sarna. Fantastic people.
Yep.
Love them. And, you know, I checked this up and I was getting back into kind of reading some of the lore and figuring out what these mechs were and everything else. And I was like really into Tex's and the BPL's presentation of the material. And he announced this is going to do the Mackie. So I'm like, huh, the Mackie. I hadn't heard of the Mackie before. So I started doing research on the Mackie. I went to Sarna, looked through that, and there was practically jack squat for that mech. It felt so relatively unknown. I believe there was like a little bit of art here and there. There's like maybe two official pieces of art for the Mackie. I think Bishop Steiner had done a redesign of the Mackie. There was some art from him. And so I just wrote Tex a letter through the BPL, just a long shot, because I'm kind of a strange artist in a way that usually I need a reason to do something. I just don't do things out of the blue. So I might like mechs, but if I don't have a reason to draw or paint a mech, I won't do it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, okay, I'll reach out to Tex. There's Jack Squatomaki. He's going to need some help. It'll give me a reason to draw some sci-fi and robot stuff. I'd been doing fantasy stuff heavily up until then. So I reached out to him and I wasn't even expecting an answer from him because, you know, he's a moderately popular guy and he's well known within the BattleTech community. I'm sure he gets people offering assistance or deals or offers all the time. So I sent him a email and said like, hey, if you're looking for some artwork, I can help you out. And he contacted me shortly afterward and they were running out of funds and stuff to do the episode. They were still trying to get more art made. And he said like, sure, come on board. You know, like you will only take what you volunteer. So it's just like, just, we need this, this, and this for the episode. So whatever work you want to grant us, we'll appreciate whatever you're going to offer.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, sir. And like, I get really obsessed once I get into a project. I just get obsessed with it and just stop working. So I just start pumping out sample pieces. I just start pumping out sample pieces. Sample pieces. And that's when we get the, like, the first stuff I did was the Jacob Cameron stuff. I was doing Jacob Cameron art before we even got to a battle mech. So, and that was a blessing within itself because Jacob Cameron has such a unique look.
I'll pop that on screen here for people that are watching.
Jacob Cameron, as I put it, he's Sergeant Slaughter with a mullet and big, those big bottle cap kind of glasses. I still cannot parse what he is wearing. So instead, when I like had to make his outfit for that stuff, it's like I just kind of went and looked at old SLDF naval uniforms, since those were all like he was in the Navy. So we did that, and then we kind of got to the Mackie stuff, and I got to where, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to try to update, move around, try to make a cooler looking Mackie for this. And so, yeah, that's just where it started with that artwork. I did a stuff. Mike Crow, he did the, the editor. He did the animations on it. I drew like a fleet with nukes. It was very exciting at the time. I hadn't really indulged back in that stuff. So from there, we created all this artwork, and I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of done. And it's like, Texas, like, you should sell prints. And I'm like, I don't really know anybody's going to be interested in prints, because it's like, I don't know this community, and I'm just, I'm not interacting with it at all at that time.
Yeah.
But we put the prints together. That's where the first Urbex design came in. We did the first Mackie pack, and it sold very, very well. And it's like, okay, there is an audience for this. There are people who want this material. There are people who appreciate this artwork. So it kind of came a fixture as it came around to the Rifleman pack, and soon it'll be the Marauder pack. And shortly after that is when Ray Arasia contacted me and invited me to do artwork for CGL. And so that was very exciting at that time, because it's like, oh, well, okay. So a lot of that stuff has still not been released as far as I'm aware of. There is a small mountain of artwork for CGL that I have produced that so far the Mackie art, back to the Mackie, for the Proliferation Cycle cover is the thing they released, but the Ill Clan book, I believe, is right around the corner. There should be a lot of stuff in the Ill Clan book. And I can't talk about it a lot too, but about the same time, I was contacted by people reviving Dream Pod 9. Are you familiar with those guys?
No, I'm not.
Those are the people who make Heavy Gear.
Okay.
So I'm also working with them right now on some stuff, which we may see an announcement for that around October. So yeah, robots just kind of came along and ate my life after working with Tex on Tex Talks Battletech. And so far that brings us up to current right now.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And you know, you mentioned Jacob Cameron. I'm curious, is that completely, you know, your character design out of your head, or were the reference photos that you kind of pulled for how he looked, or was it just like written descriptions?
We just had that one picture, and I just kind of extrapolated it from there.
Nice.
Because like I said, it was just like, okay, just trying to get a feel for how his face works. And it's just like, oh, and at that time, like I was watching like a lot of like wrestling reviews on YouTube.
Okay.
So, if people were familiar with like OSW reviews or anything like that. So I was like looking at a lot of 80s wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's when you just look at him and you're like, oh, this is Sergeant Slaughter in glasses with a mullet. It's just like, so that's when you kind of like,
yeah,
get the grasp of the geometry of how that face works.
Right. And you have another, I mean, the Ian Cameron one from the last episode was another great character design. You know, is that another one too, where you kind of, there was pre-existing art, or you just kind of draw that, you know, create that from scratch?
As far as I'm aware, there was only one picture of Ian Cameron that is available on Sarna, maybe available from someplace else. So yeah, that was another one where I just kind of had to try to feel out that character. And the funny thing about the Ian Cameron art, the like the full color one of him standing there with his hand outstretched with the fuzzy collar.
Yeah.
It's like I'd spent so long painting robots, illustrating robots and mechs, I like almost like completely forgot how to do a human face. It's just like, so that one took like a super long time to put together. So it's just like, so I'm like kind of getting to the point where you're like kind of like just designing him on the work itself. But it's just like, yeah, just trying to get it like put together. So largely, yeah, that's Ian Cameron's face from the picture. And then went back to like I did with Jacob Cameron. You just kind of bring in the SLDF, like kind of naval uniform.
Yeah.
Kind of look. That's where like the kind of the gladius at the waist comes from and like all like the cords. And plus, you know, it's BattleTech. You got to throw a cape on a person.
Yeah.
You got to, you got to bring some of that like 80s kind of like flair back into it.
Yeah. And it's funny, as you were talking there, it occurred to me for the very first time, because I've always been aware of how, well, some characters just look completely, it looks like a totally different person. I mean, I think that, you know, Natasha Kerensky has had full facial reconstruction at least 5 or 6 times, you know, according to the artist, you know, and who's drawing it, but it's true for a lot of different characters as they go along. And I know there's another, Jared Owen is an Australian artist, and he's done, you know, some of my favorite portraits of characters within it. And I was kind of bummed when the recent Legends book came out of how a lot of the character art there kind of deviated from his work, which I found was like the best. It was almost like picture quality, you know, portraits there, but you know how it kind of changes as it goes along. But while you were talking there, it just occurred to me, because I wanted to kind of commission some character art from Jared, and how if we pick the people at the different times of their life, it never occurred to me to recognize that, you know, there's people that have pictures of themselves when they were in the 80s and then in the 90s and then the 2000s, and how much different they look. You know, I was so fixated on just having like some kind of continuity of the character and just adding the years to how they look. And I wasn't even considering, when I like reach out to these artists to get these commissions, of saying, this is what the trends were in the 80s. And who knows, in the 31 or the 30-20s, 80s may have been the fashion, you know, and by the time we got to the 30-50s, it may have been more fashion.
Mm-hmm. Well, so especially, yeah, especially like, you know, as the trends have changed and as we see in like the current iterations of how people draw it, because we're very much in like, if I could put my finger on it, I think the current style that you see in a lot of the games, such as the HBS BattleTech game and materials for MechWarrior Online and this and that, it looks like it's gone a lot more cyberpunky.
Okay.
Like just the kind of look, and I don't know what kind of era that's more representative of, but that seems to be the prevailing trend on that right now.
Yeah, and it's very different there between that and the CGL. And I don't know like how you would describe the CGL, but it just seems like the character designs and the recent stuff, you know, it's definitely consistent style. I'm not a huge fan of it. I liked kind of more kind of what was happening, I guess, in the, you know, 2000 to 2015 range with the sketches. But it's, you know, almost kind of cartoony is kind of what it looks like. And but who knows, you know, maybe, you know, take a look at the Legends and see what that style, if there's an actual name to it. But I definitely prefer what the HBS stuff and what they've done, you know, to what the recent CGL stuff has been for characters.
Well, the HBS stuff is like very much in the vein of modern concept design. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you go take a tour around a place like Art Station or something, you'll very much see that that's the prevailing trend in a lot of that art stuff right now, is that kind of like quick and dirty kind of concept design stuff.
Yeah.
It's a little less on the refined side, but it usually tries to portray like a lot more like emotion.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the suggestion of technology or fashions or patterns. The HBS BattleTech version that I purchased from Good Old Games, I think, came with the art book that had like the stuff. And if anybody's like played through that HBS BattleTech game, which I kind of find it like, I love that game, but I do kind of find it funny how like they obviously had intended to go one way with all the artwork for it, but then you'll kind of see when they throw in the stuff that's kind of like a little bit looks more placeholder.
Yeah.
Because when you're like in that meeting war room on the ship and everybody's gathered there, you know, you're going to get the communication and everybody's rendered in their 3D models. And then when you talk to the person in the holo camera, it's like, oh, it's the, like the concept drawing, like kind of painting there that is, you know, static and doesn't move. And it's like, oh, they probably intended like to do like a lot more with this. But I mean, when you speak about CGL and their updating of the mechs, are you strictly talking about like the new versions of the mechs they're doing for the new identification guides?
Well, I was talking about the characters, just the portraits they were doing. You know, the recent Legends one, they had like all the notable personalities throughout the years and the characters with their mech, their iconic mechs. And so it had like Krinskin as Orion and, you know, Nikolai Malthus and a summoner, you know, Aiden and his Timberwolf, you know. And so the characters there, I wasn't a huge fan of, especially, you know, Malthus. It came out about the time I was remastering the cartoons and I was like, you know, I didn't like how the direction that they had taken with it. And they were basically kind of just had him worn away almost like a meth addict because of his enhanced imaging implants, which were supposedly very toxic for the body. But yeah, it's just the style, you know, I just don't enjoy it as much as I do, you know, things like Jared. I mean, Jared is hands above kind of, I think, the best portrait artist that Battletech has had. And there's a couple other ones that have done very similar work to what Jared did that I can't remember the name off the top of my head. But with the mechs, and I talk about the mechs a lot and the look of it, but I definitely, and actually I did the roundtable I just did. I don't know if it'll publish before this one or after this, but we had a roundtable with Tex and Mike Stackpole and Blaine Pardoe. And we were chatting about that a little bit, how the modern kind of visual of the mechs is very much kind of going towards that walking tank type aesthetic. And I'm definitely more of a kind of, you know, Gundam, you know, type of movement out of mech. You know, my own, you know, kind of phantom and headcanon is like, why would you make a mech if it was just a two-legged tank? You know, there's no benefit to making something humanoid unless it has the ability to have some level of dynamic movement. I mean, I don't think they're gymnasts out there on the battlefield, but, you know, at least the movement of, you know, of a linebacker or something like that, you know.
I feel you very much. You're correct on that. Yeah. Because as we know, just the idea of a giant mech, you know, with shooty gun, bang, bangs, it's silly in comparison to the more simplistic mechanics and the field ability of like a tank. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, when you look at loadouts on mech, you're just like, man, that is a lot of metal and machinery just to put like a one main gun on or two PPCs and a couple of machine guns. I feel what you're saying right there, because personally, my desire is to try to get mechs back to that level of physicality, because as crude as we might talk about some of the old Battletech book artwork is, as you know, margin fillers and all that stuff within it, I felt that they very much had an idea on like how dynamics and what the mechs were moving around and what the mechs were doing. And since they are, Genesis is from the Japanese style of mech, from things like Robotech and is it Dugrum?
Dugrum, yep.
Yeah, Dugrum and those properties. It's like these mechs are supposed to be moving a lot more. They're supposed to be ducking behind buildings. They're supposed to be taking advantage of the landscape. And I personally would be very fond of like drawing a Victor drop kicking a Timberwolf or something. You know, I would love to just get more into like the physicality of stuff. Like, you know, I love the old pictures of the like Atlas punching, what was it, like the old Big Ben punching
a Warhawk, like I think it was punching a Warhawk or something,
punching a Warhawk. And that's what I feel personally is missing from modern, like the more modernish art from the times, like from the Dark Age up, is we don't really see the mechs interacting with the environments all that much. You know, I want to draw an Atlas punching through a skyscraper or something, or like, you know, throwing a tanker truck at somebody, or doing like, maybe not so much as like getting like completely wrestling moves. But I feel that in essence, that's where the drama of the art lies.
Yeah.
It's not so much in the presentation of here's a robot, look at all the lasers. it's just like, no, it's the robot like interacting with pieces of people's like lives and buildings and this and that. And that's where you get the drama and that's where you get the danger, you know, because in a way it's almost like when you think about the old like Mech Warrior 2 or Mech Commander cinematics where like they're hiding in buildings and they're busting out of corners because like its leg is broken. So they have to ambush the Thor or whatever. So he's hiding in the building and they're using like a locust to lure the guy out. They get him to the city and they're jumping on the buildings and buildings are falling over and they're crashing out of buildings. And, you know, maybe they're holding or tackling or punching. That's like where I feel like a lot of the fun in the environment is, and that our current iteration of BattleTech and how it's been portrayed is not so much the product of intention, but it's a product of the limitation of the computer games.
Yeah.
Because when you think about the, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I've talked to Alex about that, you know, Flying Debris when he's been on the podcast, and that as you said, it seems like a huge infusion of new art and redesign came from MechWarrior Online, but those mechs from MechWarrior Online were built with the specific limitations that they had to actually work in a computer game, and they had to move and they had to function within the program, the programming and the software there. And then that then was kind of a basis for kind of a lot of the reimagining, and then which wasn't necessary, because when you come out of that computer game, you don't need to have that, you know, strictly controlled motion. You can have a little bit more dynamic. And that's one of the reasons why I love Bruins's work, you know, his animations, because you have dynamic motion and you have, you know, these giant machines that still have the limitation of mass, you know, but they have the ability to kind of move in the way as you would imagine, you know, a pilot with a gyro, with a very complex gyro and musculature would be able to take advantage of in mech, and would make sense investing so much money into designing something instead of just being like, well, we can just put out 10 tanks instead of this one thing. It's like, what is it about that one thing that makes it better than just overwhelming with, you know, kind of more conventional weapons? And so yeah, and you're kind of, you know, preaching the choir with, you know, your comments about seeing the mechs interacting with the environments other than just walking around shooting. And that's why I started Gallery 3025, you know, to try to kind of pull resources from the community and support artists that could illustrate the universe where the mechs were the backdrop or an element within the universe, but it was focused on what was happening, you know, whether it's whether it's a guy, you know, camping in the woods with his mech parked behind him, who's on, you know, who's deep behind enemy lines, and he's just kind of, you know, there making a fire outside his mech, you know, to stay warm at nights because he's been out there for 3 weeks alone, or, you know, or a mech helping, you know, construct a field base, you know, picking up girders or moving heavy equipment, you know, other things that you would want a mech with hands and that can move like a human doing, ducking behind cover. You know, there's a scene in one of Mike Stackpole's early books where I forgot what mech he was piloting, but Dan Allard, you know, jumps on the side of a building, you know, and reaches in the building to try to grab, you know, the bad guy, you know, out of there. And so it's like, that's the kind of thing I imagine a mech being able to do within, again, the limitation is the mass. You're working with something very heavy, you know, someone that's, you know, gymnast size is going to be able to do a lot more than someone who's, you know, a lineman and a football type of thing. But yeah, I think that's, you know, capturing that imagination of big, mobile, agile, you know, machines is far more captive for the imagination than just a big tank that has guns, you know, which I think has limited appeal.
I think very much first, it should be a shout out to Bruins and Sir Dub Dub and Wildcat 44, mm-hmm. Louisiana, those other artists who work on stuff for Tech Talks BattleTech. Also, an amusing story is with MechWarrior Online, right in the early days, I don't know, did you play beta on that?
I didn't. I played MechWarrior 2 back in the 90s, and then MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries was about when I kind of trailed off for college, and I didn't come back to BattleTech until 2018, and so there's a big time away from it. But yeah, I missed MechWarrior Online, and I did buy the HBS But all I have is this laptop that I'm talking through, and it turns it into, you know, a nuclear bomb on my lap, you know, when I try to run that game. And so I literally almost sometimes have gotten burns on my lap because I've been like, no, I want to keep playing. And then eventually I'm like, I can't do this anymore. This laptop is not suited for my lap. But yeah, so I haven't, the video games are like in the hole in my own experience with modern Battletech.
Well, early MechWarrior Online and beta, they had fall down and knock over. So you could knock over a mech. If the two mechs ran into each other, usually depending on weight class, one of them would fall over. So they had knockdown. So like, you know, you could, if you're running around in your Locust or you're running around your Jenner at that time, it's like if you ratted a corner and you hit an Atlas, you would fall over. So the mechs would fall over. So you had a certain amount of that physicality in there.
Yeah.
And it was very entertaining because the Piranha, the team at Piranha had to figure out, well, how does a Jenner stand back up? Mm-hmm. How does a catapult stand back up? So you'd have to, they'd have to sit there and you'd have to see them like put their nose in the ground and they kind of use it to study it and they get their legs up under them and they get back up. The problem at the time was when they were still having like major problems with their net code. And I'm not sure if they've fixed that. I haven't played the game in ages. So the mech would fall down, it would start getting up, and then because naturally what everybody does is when you knock over a mech, everybody in the immediate area just immediately turns around and just starts shooting it on the ground.
Right.
But since the netco wasn't up to snuff, like you would see the mech would just like warp around. Because it was like trying to figure it out. So like the mech would like start saying, but then it would just start like moving around, like disappearing, moving around, getting back up. So I believe that's why they like 86'd it.
Yeah.
So back to talking the technical limitations. Yeah, because that's like where I think, I guess it was probably a thing in most of the MechWarrior games where like even mechs that had hands and arms, like all their arms are constantly at like a 90 degree angle. It was just glorified turrets. Yeah. For pointing around and doing stuff, which is a shame because you would think like, you know, you're in a mech, you're behind a ridge, you know, you could stick that arm up over there like that and shoot. So no, I'm very much on board with like trying to get like some level of physicality and like movement and flexibility back into the mechs, which I may even say like, maybe this is a trend that even started with clan mechs, because about the time the clan mechs come back around, if memory serves, like a lot of the early designs in the clan mechs didn't have hands. Their arms were more or less glorified like turrets.
There's some of them that were their small hands. I mean, you had like things like the, you know, I think it's the Uller had teeny tiny hands, you know, but some of the bigger ones maybe had hands. The Man of War, I'm trying to imagine. I think some of the smaller ones did. I mean, things like the Adder didn't, but I feel like the Koshi did. Some of them did, but yeah, there's definitely, again, but you're going back again to limitations based on it has to be a video game, right? Because that was all based on the pods, all that stuff, how to work with the pods. But yeah, and you know, you mentioned Bruins. You know, if people listening to Renegade HG and don't know Bruins, I've done tons of stuff with them. So one, I'll put MechWarrior Bulldogs, his recent animatic up there as a pop-up. Check that out for sure. But yeah, the you know, seeing that animation, and I think you know, you were talking about kind of just shooting over ridges and stuff. I mean, there's art. I think it's Doug Chaffee back in the day where there's a commando kind of, you know, hiding behind a boulder while he reaches around to kind of shoot at a Centurion or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, you know, we need more of that. And I'm, you know, it's frustrating to kind of see very talented artists, you know, that can paint a beautiful picture, but it's just a mech shooting. I was like, you know, you can only see so many of that, you know, and a lot of the book covers too, where I assume they're investing a little bit more money than just kind of an image within a source book. It's still the same thing. It's just kind of mech shooting. And I'm like, give us some more going on in that picture, the mech doing a little bit different, but yeah, we'll get there. But
yeah, just add something quick onto that right now, because I think for me at least, the greatest compliment an artist can receive is that a person who knows nothing about the property that you're working on, has no context, becomes interested in that property through your artwork.
Yeah.
And going back to the physicality thing and comparison to, like, say, the more modern take on it, which is, here's a mech shooting left, mech shooting right, or there's a fire, or maybe there's like an extra soldier on the ground or something. I think when a person comes to the property, it's probably more exciting and dramatic to see that kind of physicality. Mm-hmm. Instead of like, I see this, it looks like a robot, it's shooting, I don't know what this is. But if you show that mech like punching or in a struggle, or you show it as target, or you show it bashing down a building or something, like, adds a lot more drama that has more appeal to the outside audience.
But yeah, and I think I've heard so many people that got into BattleTech in the 80s talk about how the cover to Tales of the Black Widow got them into BattleTech. You know, they saw that on the shelves of the Black Widow standing in front of the wreckage behind her, and there's not a single BattleTech piece of technology in that picture. Like, everything that's behind her is not a battle mech. It's some kind of mecha, but it's not a battle mech. But there is such an atmosphere and feeling in that image that it attracted eyes, and it didn't matter that it wasn't strictly canon. And you talked about the City Tech, the original City Tech box. That's an incredible cover. You have Archer busting through a wall, and guys fleeing, jumping off the bridge to get out of the way, and tank crews and whatnot. I mean, those are the kind of dynamic images that I wish we had. And instead we have, the artist is just taking direction from the guys in charge. And so my message for the guys in charge is like, man, be imaginative, like, give better scenes and you can do better than mech shooting. Cause I think, and you mentioned too, you want to capture the imagination of a new customer, someone that's new into the thing. And, this is 2021, dude, everyone's seen a mech. Whether you are into mechs or not, you've definitely seen giant robots shooting in one form or another. It's not capturing anymore. It's kind of like, whatever. But you got to do more than that to kind of get those new customers into the genre.
Well, I can't say a whole lot on the topic, but some of that art you speak of might be coming back.
Good. It may be. It has to be, right?
I can't say.
Yeah.
Good. Weak.
Oh, I'd love to see it. And cutting back in, quick kind of connection issue there, everyone. But I was talking about commissions with Eldon, kind of not only just if people are interested in commissioning him for more artwork, how to do so, but also maybe talk a little bit about the process. When somebody is reaching out to artists and they want a piece of art, what is it that you as an artist need from them to kind of deliver the best product? And I know that that's kind of the most challenging thing, is that communication of kind of being able to correctly articulate what it is that you want to see in your image, so that it's not a constant back and forth of, is this it, is this it, is this it? Maybe take us through that and what people can do to make that easy.
Well, I don't feel I'm probably the best person to talk to about commission style work, because it wasn't until I started working with text that commissions became a possibility. And as you stated earlier, I'm so super busy with working on everything, everyone. I'm currently not taking commissions.
Yeah.
From my experience in that, speaking to artists who do commissions, try to bring the customer and client in early. This is speaking from my personal day job. Is like, you want to get the in-person consumer of the product in on it early enough so that you can head off any kind of problems in the past, make sure that they kind of sign off on what you're doing, so it's not like a huge surprise. If you find that a client is requesting too much from you and you're just in your head and you're like, I don't know how all these elements are going to mesh together and work, because sometimes people will request something along the lines of, oh, I want a first-person view of a mech warrior looking at another mech, and another mech's away, but that mech is like shooting at you, and the guy in the cockpit's shaking his fist, so we see like the explosion from behind the first mech as it blows out, and it's just like, no, these elements don't work together, guys. What I have found with a lot of clients in the past is to try to get them in the headspace of thinking about their request for the commission. Sometimes if I'm like, okay, sit down and make a crude drawing, just sit down and try. It doesn't matter how bad it is. It doesn't matter if it's any good. We're just trying to get the person to think about what they're requesting.
Yeah.
So that they get like it kind of in their visual headspace, and that'll help you as the artist to say, okay, this is exactly what the guy, because working with some of the other clients, like recently we were designing an element to a robot, and like they had requested like this kind of cylinder thing. It was like a hydro pack for like traveling underwater. And it was supposed to have two kind of side jets on it. And I'm sitting there, they send me a piece of art where they kind of have it there next to it. And it's like, okay, I kind of see these elements, but I don't know how, like in my head, working mechanically with this kind of like main cylinder of the hydro pack. So we went back and forth just like a few times. And I was just like, well, you want them orientated like this. You want them orientated like that. You want them sticking like this. You want them sticking like that. So he just did like a top-down view, circle, circle. And it's like, okay, I know exactly what you want now. So that's what I would encourage anybody who has worked with a client or you're working with people on commissions. Just make sure you bring them in early. So you're doing like your black and white comps, you're offering them like different perspectives or this or that.
Right.
And also try to help them also visualize, because we can all have concepts in our heads of what we think is cool, but we're thinking about those things mostly in abstract concepts and not how it'll be laid out in like an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. So that's what I would encourage people to do. Don't ask me about pricing. I'm terrible with pricing.
I had actually just seen, I think it was on Twitter, somebody made a tweet exactly what you were saying. They're saying, you know, as a client, just sketch. Basically do your version of the picture. You know, you don't have to have the skill. That's me. And just show me what it is that you want to see, but with somebody who knows how to draw. And even looking at, you know, people see lots of kind of behind the scenes of how movies are made and all the, you know, the just like crappy images on the storyboard, on post-its or whatnot on the wall, and like sketching out a scene, how you do it. All of that is super simple, but it's just giving that image. And so that makes total sense to me of kind of what to do. And after I had seen that tweet, and I was like, yeah, whenever I do a commission from now on, I'm just going to like draw it out and say, you know, this is the perspective I want. And still try to give the artist, you know, if you feel like you can do something better, just send me the idea. But, but yeah, that sounds awesome.
And I think that's a major issue, is just, you know, communication between the client and the end, you know, commissioner.
Yeah.
It's just like, just trying to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Yeah.
But people are usually get like very embarrassed about that, because like, oh, I don't know how to draw. I can't do this. And you like have to ensure them. It's like, no, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, man. Doesn't matter. Just trying to get the idea of what you have in your head.
Right. Definitely. Yeah. And it's, you know, you were talking about kind of commission rates and whatnot. And I feel like, you know, people need to know, like, one, you know, come, maybe not come with your budget, but, you know, come with that idea and let the artist kind of, you know, steer you along those lines. And it's, this is one of the things I love about Bruins. Bruins lives in Minnesota. And so, you know, his commission rate is very different than like, you know, ones I've had in Australia and whatnot, because cost of living, or LA. I've tried, you know, with the Gallery 3025, I've been hoping to try to pull in some professional concept artists into it. You know, they live in LA or New York or whatnot. And it's like, oh, wow, the rates are very different. So you got to ask, you got to figure that out, you know.
Very much. I mean, with me, like doing maybe a single mech, you know, with a background or doing this and that, I mean, that's going to be like a 10 hour or more piece of work. And it's like, and the more mechs, the more stuff you add on, it could go from like 20 to 40 hours, you know, just working on that. And when you think about like a professional artist, you know, who works in the industry, and if they're just not doing it for fun, it's just like, no, these are professional rates, because this is a work week I'm about to put into this. Right. And I need more than $100 for a work week, you know?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And I had a great conversation with Scroggins, and I don't know if I recorded or not, but we just basically spent an hour and I had a huge gallery of art pieces. And I was like, how much would this cost? How much would that cost? How much? And it was amazing for giving me an idea of kind of what levels cost what money. And obviously that was just, you know, from his perspective. To know the difference between a $300 piece and a $600 piece and a $1,500 or $2,000, you know, book cover type of piece, you know, it was extremely helpful.
And Scroggins is very good. I love that last Marauder piece he put out.
Yeah. Which one is it?
The one where they're on the moonscape, has dropship in the background. Yeah. Like has a Marauder up front.
Definitely.
I myself, I'm still like learning how to decently price stuff out for that. Cause like I suffer from very low self-confidence on that. So it's always like, well, I don't know, shucks. Yeah. Give me a $50, then I'll do it. Yeah. But I'm quickly learning that that is untenable.
Yeah.
I heard that Magic the Gathering artists who produce art for the cards. Now, I might be extremely mistaken about this, but I think a piece for one of those cards runs about like 600.
That's what I heard. 600 was the low end. And like for like the veterans who are doing like kind of the better art, it was maxed out around 1200 for a piece of card art.
That makes no sense.
Yeah. And I think they may have started around 300, you know, and then eventually as Magic's gotten bigger, it's kind of gone up. But yeah, those were the numbers I had heard as well. And I'd been doing a lot with the cards. Actually, I got a lot of them, my custom cards for the CCG frame back there, you know, and I'd love to coordinate with CGL and try to get a new card game going for BattleTech. But yeah, and I think I showed you a copy of one I'd use some of your art on some of the cards that look beautiful. But whenever I see a new piece of great art, I'm like, I can make a custom card, add it to my collection, put it back there. But I had, what was that question I had? I wanted to ask about your magazine covers. I absolutely love them. You know, I have one up on the back there. I'll throw some up samples on the screen as I ask this question, as you begin to answer it too, so people can see some of the stuff. It is totally fun. I love it because it is so outside of what we've seen before in BattleTech. Talk to me about what inspired that. You know, when you're going through and you're making a magazine cover, what is that process like? Because there's some fun stuff out there.
Well, I'm a very big fan of old illustrators and like old pulp art and pulp magazines. Yeah. And that actually came around by accident because I'm working on that original Mackie art, the one you have behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working on it. And I'm like, I just start giggling to myself because, oh my gosh, it just looks like an old dumb book cover. Like if you went to like Helping Hands, digging through the pile of paperbacks there, it's like, oh, this is what it looks like. So I was like, I was just slapping titles and verbiage on them and just sending them over the text as a joke.
Yeah.
Because they look so old and pulpy. Yeah. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I could throw these into the print packs. It'd just be really fun to sit there and make something like that Draconis magazine, the Draconis men's magazine. And that's a lot of fun because you can just stick like stupid like lore jokes on them and like this and that. And I kind of feel like with a lot of that, like, you know, extra stuff that I kind of create for the packs, like the coasters or the stickers or the magazine covers, is like, I feel like this is just future junk.
Yeah.
Just like a portal in time opened up and a bunch of stuff, like the contents of a like 30-50 BattleTech dentist's office just poured out. And so you're like, oh, that's what this is. Like, you know, you went by a magazine stand. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do there's a plan for the Marauder pack that there will be, I believe I'm just going to do like a mock Soldier of Fortune cover. Like if anybody's familiar with it, you just look at old Soldier of Fortune covers.
I remember. Yep.
Like they're just dumb and garish and like, you know, I'd love, so a lot of that's just like recreating that old kind of garbage like you might find in like a flea market.
Yeah.
I mean, very much with like the book cover for the Mackie and then the fake book cover for the Rifleman set, which was like, you know, it's just like looks like an old Tor novel cover. So Tor Sci-Fi, they used to be a publishing company. I don't even know if they're still around.
But
that's like just like something fun, just that something stupid that makes me giggle about stuff. It's just like the Urbex shirt or the Rifleman shirt, which was just like a callback to Have Gun Will Travel, an old Western TV show. and like, you know, the Marauder with the Mad Cat shirt, which is very funny because that thing's just got a ton of like deep lore jokes on the front. Yep. And I'll get people like asking, is like, well, why is it a Marauder shirt and it says Mad Cats? And I have to be like, ah, you have to go like check out the lore, you know, because like right under it, of course, it's like Mad Cats Garage. And it's like, what do they specialize? Marauders, catapults, and cataphract arm and legs. And it's like, oh yeah. You know, and at the bottom it says like, you know, ask us about our custom Rakasha build. And it's like, yeah, because the Rakasha was just, I believe it was just a Marauder that they just was a catapult frame or a Marauder frame that they just like put arms on.
Yeah, it was a mess.
Just trying to make their own Mad Cat. So no, a lot of that's just like, because, you know, even though the universe is played straight, you know, it's like, oh, this is like, you know, the war-torn future and all these houses are fighting, I feel like it's still all inherently ridiculous and we should find our fun in it where we can find the fun.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yeah, so a lot of that stuff is just jokes that make me laugh. It's like, and I'll really, like, when I make them, I'll try to do as much digging as I can to get, like, kind of lore-relevant stuff on, like, the front of it. Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, so this is all stuff that's, like, you know, the next one will have, like, a lot of, like, hints to the clan invasion and this and that. So, yeah, it's just kind of like a bunch of jokes built in. It's mainly stuff that just makes me laugh and put together. And I think it does create, like, a unique thing for the universe.
Yeah, I mean,
people appreciate them.
Yeah, I love them. This is my favorite, the Urbex. I love it. You know, I'll pop up the image again, but the logo around it is just it's hilarious. And then you sent some buttons in the last shipment with my shirt. I'm gonna put one in. Say, make buttons of the Urbex. They're super cheap. I've done it before for, you know, my nonprofit. And easy, you know, super cheap to print. And so you're not putting a lot into inventory and they're cheap for people to buy. And okay.
I'm going to give a hint to everybody out there.
Yeah.
Anybody who is interested in stuff like that, like, you know, people who might be aspiring, people going to conventions or doing this and that.
Mm-hmm.
It's very cheap and easy to get that stuff made if you have the art ready. Like right now I go through a service called Sticker Mule and they send me deals all the time.
Yeah.
So they'll say like, hey, this month or next 3 days, we're going to do 50 acrylic pens for $19. And if you have stuff ready to go, you can just jump on that. And it's a very easy way to make a lot of merchandise very quick. So awesome. Basically that's why the battle powder buttons came in with the Marauder shirt is this, yeah, like, about the time I make it, they're like, hey, we'll make buttons. And I'm like, okay, I got the battle powder graphic ready to go. Like, let's make these and we'll toss them in there as a bonus for people who buy shirts.
Perfect. Yeah. I'll do it. Sticker Mule, MULE.
Yeah.
All right. I'll check it out. Yeah, definitely. And, yeah, I'd love to, you know, when you do have space for a commission, I'd love to kind of commission like a similar thing for Renegade HPG and let your kind of imagination go to make a little circle there that I could use on a shirt and a button and whatnot. That'd be a blast.
Awesome.
But,
awesome.
But yeah, so you have a ton of stuff coming up with CGL. Maybe talk a little bit, you know, about kind of your art history before that, because you were making a comic. And I remember, you know, when I connected with you on Patreon, it was the Astray 3 comic that you were making. And so what was your kind of artistic career? What's your background in the art and kind of what do you do when you're not working on big mechs?
Well, I am currently a graphic designer by trade.
Mm-hmm.
So right now my day job is doing graphic designs for apparel. So that's kind of like product design. That's kind of what I do during the day.
Yeah.
But mainly my past is I went to like a dumb cheap trade school for computer animation and found out that wasn't really for me because I'm a bit of a, you know, person who wants to do everything themselves. And once you start learning about animation, except for rare occasions, that is a group and team effort. Mm-hmm. So I kind of went off the comic books. So comic books, narrative storytelling, that's kind of my bread and butter. So that's usually what I've always been practicing towards. And I've been a fan of like old US comics. I'm a fan of European comics. I dabble in some manga and some anime, but for the most part, as it came to A Stray 3, was a reboot of a web comic that I created. So mainly I'm interested in the narrative and storytelling. And yeah, up till like when I started doing BattleTech art, like I was mainly focused on doing that comic. And of course the comic wasn't really taking off. I made a lot of mistakes in like, you know, putting it together and the theme and the layout, a bunch of that stuff. But mainly I think that's what I feel it's what has aided and made my BattleTech art unique, because I'm focused on narrative and reasons and causes for things. Like, I feel like a good illustration is like a good sentence or a good paragraph. It's describing an exciting action that would be enticing to the reader on its own. So that mainly comes from that kind of narrative background. Because like I said earlier, I'm kind of a strange artist where I mainly look for reasons to do things, but I don't just do them out of the blue. So normally if I'm thinking of, oh, I want to draw a busty elf or something, it's just like, I will not just do that to do that. I'll be like, okay, well, why would I? And what would she be doing?
Yeah.
So normally that's where a lot of the genesis of a lot of my illustration ideas are. So yes, I am mainly interested in narrative style art. I am looking for opportunities to get back towards creating comics in the future. I've got some plans, nothing I can really talk about right now. But yeah, just my background is mainly just studying old artists, old comic books. Like I mentioned before, things like the pulp artists, the old pulp art books, like, big fan of like Frank Frazetta, kind of old fantasy art, like old comic art, like Jack Kirby and Alex Toth. So yeah, mainly like layouts. And that's what I would encourage like any kind of artist who's looking to get into illustration or anything of the such, is like, make sure you study a variety of things, like get out there, look at other artists, learn their processes, figure things out. And basically build up experience and tools that when you come to something, like you have like an array of experience and techniques. Mm-hmm. And I feel that's what I bring to the table with BattleTech, is like, I wasn't really drawing robots up until the time I started talking to Tex. It was only when I started working with Tex that I started drawing mechs. And I was able to bring all those kind of narrative and illustration tools with me to when I started doing mechs, and I was able to try to add my own unique flair and spin to that art.
Right. Yeah, that's what's part of, you know, with Gallery 3025, was specifically the goal was to try to bring people who were not in the BattleTech sphere into it as kind of a long-term goal. And
that's very important.
Yeah, and just get, you know, like, you know, if I can get someone who does concept art for the Halo games and be like, you know, what can you do with the mecha, or who's doing stuff for Lucasfilm, you know, they're probably out of our budget, but you know, someone who's, you know can do sci-fi but hasn't done mechs, or maybe has done some kind of mecha as kind of like on their DeviantArt portfolio or art station portfolios, and being like, hey, do you want to give a shot at, you know, at this mech genre? That's what I'd love. And you know, I've been sending emails and trying to find someone who has the time and interest to kind of come out of their day job, because most of the people who are good at that, they have a day job. You know, so they're getting paid, yeah, the professionals. Yeah. And it's like, okay, well, you know, can I pay you $1,500 or $2,000 for a week worth of work to make, you know, high quality, you know, illustration, you know, and even if you can do that, you know, is it worth their time to kind of do that, to basically work double time, their full-time job plus this other stuff to do, you know, a high quality piece. And so I'm going to keep reaching out, you know, try to find that. I would also love to get someone who's a professional concept artist and just give them a short story or a chapter from BattleTech and just be like, sketch out 10 or 12 concept sketches, you know, like you were saying that HBS did, you know, just kind of low quality, you know, but they show the scene, the emotion, the atmosphere. They don't need to be polished, and just, you know, spit out some concept sketches. I think that would be awesome.
I think it's like, outside voices to a property is very important. And that's why it's like when you see people like accuse people of being casuals or not being open, but outside perspectives is what kind of like shakes things up and allows us to see what it is through a mirror outside of our own. And like what they can bring and experiences to the books, because if all you've ever done is like, you know, lived in the BattleTech universe or consumed that, like you're just going to eventually just start kind of regurgitating the same stuff like over and over and over again, because you're pandering to a very specific audience that has very specific tastes and very specific like knowledge. And bringing in outside opinions and voices can bring a whole new level of spice to that. But I will also say that probably part of your obstacle is it is daunting to artists to get them out of their wheelhouse. And if they're very comfortable in doing what they're already doing. And like, it's like, sir, I see you paint flowers very, very well. Are you interested in painting a centurion?
Yes.
It's like a thing too, is like, if they don't have to, they're really not going to like try to strive out of their wheelhouse. And that goes back to just a little bit what I was saying earlier, is like artists should try to get out of their wheelhouse from time to time. But like, yeah, I mean, plus not to denigrate the property. It's like, I'm sure if you came to that person and said like, hey, we want you to do a Warhammer 40K picture. You want to paint some Space Marines for us? And they're going to be like, oh, Warhammer. I know what Warhammer is. I see that stuff all around. Oh, that might be interesting. Might bring in a few more followers or like people wearing some work. But we're like, sir, would you like to come paint something for BattleTech? You know,
well, that's like, why you like, got to say at least Mech Warrior. There's more exposure.
Yeah, Mech Warrior. I learned BattleTech doesn't get much mileage anymore. Because like, I was like sitting around like someplace. Like, I think I was at work and people were like asking what I was doing on my spare time. I'm like, oh, it's like, and they're younger people. They're below their 30s. And it's just like, oh yeah, I do stuff for BattleTech. And I'm like, you guys have ever heard of BattleTech? And they're like, no, what is that? I'm like, Mech Warrior. And like one person was like, okay. I kind of know what that is. Yeah. Mech Assault.
Something. Well, I find Mech Warrior 2 was the biggest intro for the genre, I think, in the history of the genre. It was the biggest exposure, it was the biggest game that year. And even when I started Renegade HPG and I posted on my Facebook to kind of friends and family, hey, this is what I'm doing, check it out. Someone was like, oh, is that from the old like Mech Warrior game in the 90s? And I was like, sure. Yeah. It was like, okay.
You know, foot's in the door, and that's what's important.
Yeah, that's one of them. But yeah. Well, you were, I wanted to pursue the stuff with comics, and I want to learn more kind of what your thought, because I have been thinking for the last 2 months, you know, I think it would be really cool to get BattleTech comic back up and going. And I know the guys at CGL, they get a little license for doing little things, like, you know, Blaine has his, you know, little miniature company on the side now. I thought it'd be cool to go up and say, hey, you know, what would it take to get, you know, a license just to do a short run of comics, like a little mini series something? Because I think if you look back in the history of BattleTech in the early days, one of the things that kind of Jordan and the Wiseman and the guys were great at is, man, they just did that kind of typical 80s, early 90s kind of market saturation, you know, whereas like, you know, you look at like He-Man, it was like toys, cartoons, comics, et cetera, G.I. Joe doing the same thing. And BattleTech, you know, BattleTech was, you know, tabletop, you know, video game, comics, animated series. They're just like kind of like all these different ways of doing that. And BattleTech has just at some point since been like, we're tabletop, you know, we're not doing all that stuff. And I think it kind of hurt it. And I think there's some really cool short stories that have already been written that would make, you know, a great little like mini series comics. And so I'm curious what, you know, for you, kind of any insights you would have into the process, definitely like a budget, like for me, just to say, oh yeah, if I wanted to bring like a pitch to Lauren and say, hey, you know, what would it take to get a license? Just do a little mini series of comics, publish it, do whatever. You know, what would be the production? Like, you know, let's say a 4 to 6 comic run. What kind of budget I'm looking at for a project like that?
Oh, I can't really say, because all my stuff has been on my lonesome. I could give you like a little bit of a ballpark on printing prices, but if I was to have to put like a quantifiable amount of money on the amount of work that I've done for myself, yeah, it'd be hard to put that together.
And I was looking for not the printing stuff that could be figured out, but like the creation, like what's, you know, for an artist, for the time that it would take to get the story, to get the art, you know, the paneling, the setup, you know, and so I've, you know, listened and talk about, you know, watching tons of YouTube. You know, I remember watching a documentary of Todd McFarlane, and he was talking about the process, and I like didn't even realize that, you know, you have line artists and colorists, and then a finalizer, like there's all that, like what, you know, to pay those people and get the right people to be able to create the files that would then go to print, you know, what's the time involved in that? What's kind of the budget to produce? You know,
it depends on the, yeah, I mean, so much of it depends on the detail level, mm-hmm. and, you know, getting the people together, because comics aren't exactly a thriving industry as it is right now. Mm-hmm. And even though what people don't realize about working on comics is comics are very much a marathon. I mean, it's a lot of a labor intensive work. As you mentioned, I mean, there's inkers and there's pencilers and there's colorists and there's letterers to get everything done. So, yeah, it's hard to find people dedicated enough that will do all that kind of work, like without like some major pay. But
no, I'm saying, you know, this would be paid whatever market rates are. So if someone's like, you know, Alden, I'm going to commission you to make a BattleTech comic, what would you, you know, say? Is that a couple thousand dollars? Is that a $10,000 project? You know, how long would it take? You know, what is?
Yeah, I'm not up on current like page rates. Mm-hmm. And I personally, if you go back and look at, so say those S3 three pages,
right?
Like, those are very labor intensive pages. Me creating one of those pages, because I do all the work by myself.
Yep.
That is about 30 hours, like a page. It's 20 to 30 hours a page, because that's between layouts, concept, drawing, inking, coloring, and lettering. So I don't know. I'd have to crunch those numbers to get it to you. Okay. I would say that if you wanted your more realistic, bet to see something like that done, there are comic companies right now who specialize in licenses.
Okay.
And I believe if they're still around, like I said, I haven't been comic book store in a long time. Dynamite Studios and Boom Studios, I believe. Boom Studios, I believe that one time was doing Warhammer comics, but they specialize in producing licensed comics. And I would probably say that if your best bet to have something licensed, produced, and done on time and on a regular basis would probably be approaching one of them with the idea, and then maybe seeing if you could get something together with the script and then the licensing. That would probably be your best avenue. If you are going to assemble a team by yourself, that would be much more difficult. From what I understand, I thought there was somebody on Twitter who is putting together art for a possible comic in one of the Shrapnel issues. But I haven't followed up on that in a long time.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've talked to Bruins about trying to do something with Blaine Pardo's story, Flames of Idlewind, which actually doesn't have any mechs. It's an elemental story, but I think it'd be a really cool one. But yeah, and that's, you know, thinking about that project and things that could be done, you know, one of the things I was like, what about a comic book? A comic book would have kind of wide appeal to try to market. But, and I would imagine it kind of going through a Kickstarter for publish, you know, kind of invest in the production and of the material, and then go to Kickstarter for actually kind of getting it produced and printed. But yeah,
it's very much like, I mean, I would have to get back with you on numbers on that later, like mm-hmm. figuring something like that out. Going through Kickstarter, of course, would probably be an entire different proposition, but I guess BattleTech is no stranger to Kickstarter right at this time. I do not know anything about how you would obtain the licenses for that.
Well, I've talked to Lauren about that process, and so I'm familiar, you know, with kind of what would need to be done. But it's more just trying to playing with ideas. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur by heart, so I'm always kind of playing with ideas of what something would be cool to kind of pursue as a project. And actually, you're the third you know, kind of artists I've talked to with, you know, some kind of, you know, exposure, experience, background in comics. And so, yeah, it's definitely, I'll keep asking. Maybe I'll kind of ping you some more.
Once you have a very more solid idea of what the project will require, like how many pages and what you do, because at this point in time, I wouldn't even talk about doing a series of floppies, just make it a graphic novel, mm-hmm. just probably put it together. I mean, you probably wouldn't want to exceed like 100 pages or so on it. But, you know, that would probably be your best bet. It's just to see if you can fund like a one shot and it's printing. Don't rely on there being like, you know, more. Just make sure your first one is pretty solid. Yeah. And then if it's successful, then you could probably talk about sequel books.
Yeah.
But honestly, yeah, but I can't give you any kind of hard numbers right now because I haven't even looked into it. And since I'm used to being the person that does the production,
yeah,
it's kind of like one of those things. It's like, it's hard to gauge like my time on it. So I'd have to like look into that. But seriously, if you can get something like that up and running, I'd be seriously open to helping out with the project.
Yeah, I'll definitely circle back on that. My brain's, the gears are turning, but yeah, that'd be fun.
I would love to do a sci-fi comic. I've got ideas for sci-fi short stories. I think my next major comic project would probably be another fantasy kind of D&D-esque thing, mm-hmm. which probably won't see any movement on that till next year sometime. So, and I'm putting together a team for that project right now, but nothing solid has kind of taken off. Gotcha. But I'm always open to a comic project if I can make time for it.
Excellent. Yeah, we'll talk more. And are you long-term with CGL, or did you just kind of get a batch of projects that you're done with now? What's that future of that relationship look like? You know, what can we expect for your BattleTech portfolio moving forward?
I am a contracted, contract to contract, I should say. So, we've been pretty steady with CGL so far. I believe almost every month they've approached me with some kind of new project for art. So yeah, like a lot of it's still pretty much covered. From what I think, there will probably be a decent amount of my artwork in the upcoming Ill Clan book. I just finished up another batch for some future books. So it's been pretty consistent so far, and it looks like I'm going to be starting on another set of projects for them soon. Just waiting for like the contracts and everything to kind of work out. So it's been very consistent. I mean, every time I finish a project for Brent, I'm like, well, this is done. He'll never talk to me again. Like, you know, that's it. It's over. It's like, so I always like feel like at the end of one of them, because like they're exhausting projects usually. So it's just like, you know, you kind of get it done, get it turned in. They say, yay, send us the final files. And you're like, I send them over, but like, I almost never expect to hear from them again. I don't know why, but inevitably, like usually pops up in another kind of like 1 or 2 weeks and be like, hey, we got some more artwork we need to get done. Are you open for it? And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. I'll take what you got. So awesome. Yeah. So
I sent Brent an email, what was it, like 2 weeks ago? I was like, and, you know, with the invite to the podcast, and I hadn't heard back. I've sent him a couple invites, but I haven't heard back. But I also pinged him. I tried to get Samir Dawood on his radar, which I posted on some of my social media lately, who's just he's a cancer scientist, and he posts on Reddit every once in a while. It's his only social media, and incredible pieces, you know, for just kind of like someone who's doing this on the side. To try to get, you know, a little bit more, put him on Brent's radar, but he's a fun one that would have, but yeah, no luck there. But then when I talked to Lauren last, he was like, if you want to do a podcast, one of the guys, let me know and I'll tell them. And so I might have to, they don't respond to me. So I might have to go over their heads and, hey, Lauren, no. I want to talk to Brent. You know, can you tell him that I'm trying to get in touch with them? But
Brent's great, but yeah. I believe he's very, very busy.
Oh, I'm sure all those guys are. They do so much, you know, for you know, with their time. It's amazing, you know, just how much material they pop up. They're very, very prolific. Well, before I let you go, there was one more question that I kind of missed on my list that I wanted to ask you, was that background, because we talked about the magazine covers. There's so many kind of in-universe jokes there. you know, when you were kind of doing a piece, is that just like, are you taking deep dives into Sarna, or is some of that you like are just like, you know, you're familiar with the universe and to that level and that you can kind of pull that stuff up? Like what goes in when you're doing a piece? You know, is a lot of kind of pre-existing knowledge from, you know, from your own early days, you know, in the universe, or are you kind of like diving in and kind of, you know, pulling that out of the you know, the archives there whenever you have a new idea?
Well, basically, it does coincide with my renewed interest probably between Tex and when MWO came out.
Yeah.
And just kind of cruising through Sarna, reading this and that. There's a lot of stuff that, like, if I'm, like, just cruising through the forums or, like, the Facebook pages for everything Battletech or Classic Battletech, and I see someone mention, like, a mech or something, like, I'll go look it up on Sarna, yeah. And then you just kind of, like, go through that rabbit hole of trying to figure things out. So, basically, it's all, like, nuggets and stuff of things that I discover while I'm researching other things. So, recently, I did a piece for the Marauder Pack with a Marauder 2C in it, and so that led down like a thing where it's like, okay, how was this mech used? Who used this mech? Who is most prolific with it? And then that kind of leads into like, well, the whole early rabbit hole of the clan invasions. So technically I'm doing the piece, and I believe that's based on the first contact between Ghost Bear and Kurita. And it was something, I can't remember off the top of my head. I believe it's like the 9th Alshane unit for Kurita. So basically, like, I'll start doing my research to put the piece together.
Yeah.
So it'll be like, okay, this is a Kurita unit. What Kurita unit has been there? Mm-hmm. Then I'll go through, like, the fan resources, because there's the camo specs online that everybody loves to reference. And then I'll just go dig through there. And I'll start looking up through there. It's like, okay, well, this unit has this colors. This unit has this colors. This Q unit is similar to that one. Because from what I remember that one, that particular unit that Ghost Bear encountered didn't have an established camo thing. But there were other units under the Alshane name. So I kind of like looked through there. But part of that too is like, I've just wanted to really draw like a Kurita mech with like dragon tattoos, like Japanese, you know, Yakuza yeah. tattoos on it. So, like, I'm kind of, like, doing all this research, and then I kind of pick up trivia like a lint roller. Like,
okay.
I just, like, pick up all these, like, little snippets of different trivia and stuff from listening to text and stuff online. And that's so when it comes to doing, like, the magazine stuff and doing this and that, like, suddenly, like, oh, I've got, like, a little bunch of little stuff floating around my head for like the blurbs or the cover copy and stuff like that. So yeah, it's very kind of scattered, and it's usually like very pertained to early Battletech. Like I can't really say much that happens after the Jihad era up to Dark Age. Like I know a little bit about Jihad era because sometimes people still mention mechs from the Jihad era.
Yeah.
So you'll look through it, but then it's like, you know, that's when you get to like the really crazy like clan or totem mechs, because like I had to do pieces that had some of those like old four-legged mechs and like different tanks and stuff, and stuff assignments like Brent will give me, because it's like, okay, we want a picture of this and this portraying this event, and I'm going like, I have no idea what any of this stuff in here is. So I'll go through and I'll start researching it and reading about it and trying to figure out what the loadouts are, you know, the manufacturing history. Like a lot of the stuff is like, say the Marauder shirt, like if you see what the HPG number there is for Carlisle. So then like when I make that, because of course I don't want to look like a jerk in front of like the whole Battletech community when I sell this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like, okay, I have to go through the Marauder's manufacturer history and see if I can find a planet that had a factory that produced Marauders at one point, or parts for Marauders. So yeah, it's going to be like looking through and like, okay, this planet made this and this, we could use this one. Well, this one made more of the base variants. So like, I'm trying to make sure everything's as kosher as possible with the lore. So,
well, you've got to use Bishop for that. That's who I use whenever I'm like, you know, who made this mech and where, you know, how are, you know, I was like, who had access to this version of the catapult in this time period? And I like just ping Bishop, and Bishop's like, oh, you know, he's got it. You know, he's got that stuff memorized. So if you ever get stuck, you know, or you want to skip an hour of research, you know, ping Bishop on Facebook or something and he can help you out.
But, I mean, there's very ones that are very apparent, like, you know, looking up like a cataphract. It's like, oh, well, this originated out like with Capellans, or you go around and like, you know, a Hatamocho Chi or whatever and stuff. But it's like interesting because like, oh, I came to that mech because I was looking at like the lore for the Charger. And then it's like you go for the Charger and it's like, well, a Charger was this, that. And then it became like, frame was used for the Thug, and the Thug was used for the frame for the Hatamocho Chi, and like, yeah, so it's a rabbit hole. You can spend all day long on Sarn. Yeah,
Sarn is amazing. And one of my early podcasts was with Nick Jansma, who started Sarn. And one of the coolest things, he started that when he was like 12 years old. It was crazy. It blew me away, that fact. But that was a great conversation. If people want to, you know, follow it, I'll kind of put it in a pop up here. But yeah, Sarn is awesome. Great resource, but this has been fun, Eldon. I appreciate you kind of taking the time. You know, I love your art. You know, I can't wait to see more of it, either through Text Talks or through CGL's new product. And, you know, again, for people that want to connect, Eldon, if you're watching this soon, you can pick up some of those, Marauder shirts, that look wonderful. It's a little raglan kind of green with like a, off white. And it's wonderful. These shirts are all extremely comfortable, which I'm a stickler out. I hate cheap shirts, man. I hate cheap t-shirts. No. And so these are high quality material. Pick them up. And Eldon's been putting out kind of a new t-shirt every couple months. But that is at ASTRAY3.bigcartel.com. I'll put the links down below too. You can hook up with Eldon. Let me rephrase that. You can connect with Eldon on Twitter and on Instagram at Eldonius Rex. And Eldon, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. And this has been fun.
You're most welcome. This has been a long time in the making.
Definitely. I've been pinging you a couple times, but I'm a persistent guy. You know, I'll do it. So. But thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Bye.
Bye.